Hi, everyone. It's Dr. Denise. This is the Dr. Denise Show, and this is the Embrace Your Neurostyle series. And I have to tell you, Kirk Patrick Miller and I have been talking a lot about neurostyle shame busters with myself, he and Kathleen, and we're talking so much about it. I thought I should just have him back on. Kirk, how are you?
I'm doing really well, and thanks for having me back. I really enjoyed the topic. I think it's so vital and something that's really freeing for individuals and everyone, actually, regardless of what your situation is, to be honest.
Well, and I also want to let everyone know that Kirk holds a space in my heart of hope, awareness. He's a mental health warrior. I'll put his bio back in for everyone to read. You know, I'll honor you. You're an award-winning nominated author, violinist. You've successfully been in remission and, stable with bipolar. You've got ADHD, OCD, anxiety. But I want to tell you, since our last interview, our very first interview of this deep dive series, everyone wanted Kirk to be the very first one to be on this deep dive, because Kirk let me know that years back, the power of words, the power of thoughts, and sort of like what ignites us to start to go from our own crisis to thrive. And he's been on his thrive path for a long time. But when we go deeper, there's certain words and thoughts that can help us ignite that. And I just want to thank you for letting me know. I just want to thank you because you actually gave me feedback that this was helpful.
Well, it was a very empowering term for me. And when you'd mentioned it, you know, years ago, and we'd spoken about it, I was kind of beginning I was ending kind of my stabilization and beginning my thrive. Because you always talk about, you know, crisis, stabilization, and thrive. And for me, most of my life was pretty much crisis, and I wasn't even aware of it. So And a lot of times there were just heavy weights that held me down. Everything from the labels that were given to me to the struggles I went through. Even little tiny things that I wasn't even aware were something that I would deal with in the future. Like OCD, that was something that was present really early on, whether it was patterns or driving, and a lot of those things really made me feel separate from the rest of the world.
And so can I do what I call like a sacred pause or interruption, like strategic interruption?
Absolutely.
Because you just unpacked a lot. So your ability to articulate that most of your life has been in crisis and that you didn't even have the awareness. I think one of my biggest passions for going deeper on the Embrace Your Neurostyle is I feel like a lot of us don't have this awareness. And by the way, I want everyone to know that this interview that we're doing right now was ignited by the fact that I have the honor of working with Kirk Patrick Miller and Kathleen O'Toole. We are going to do a deep dive book, and we want to really elevate these concepts. But the awareness factor, like, I'm aware, everyone, that when I get super excited, I interrupt. And like, sometimes it's because I'm like tagging off and I'm like, oh my God, Kirk's right. Kathleen's right. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. And I can see it in my mind's eye, not only the words they're saying, but I can sort of see the whole, I get the download. And so I think besides the labels of, and I want to talk about what you just said, that labels, sometimes you can get stuck on them. But so our words, thoughts, and actions are multidimensional. When I even just started to introduce you, Kirk, right now, and putting suffering with bipolar, ADHD, OCD, and generalized anxiety, for me, even though you wouldn't think this because I'm an MD, I'm an integrative psychiatrist, I like the fact that we have those scientific ways of understanding emotional states and the diagnoses, and I appreciate Western science. But for me personally, when I think of Kirk Patrick Miller, when I think of you, I think of a kind soul, a Renaissance man, a musician, an author, an athlete, a mental health warrior. I think of you as someone who is bridging and working with professionals. I see you as a fighter. And so I appreciate that we're discussing the fact that, and I want to make sure you don't think I don't honor the fact that you've gone through many crises and at times still do. So that the labels of bipolar, ADHD, OCD, and generalized anxiety serve a purpose to get into your thrive. But for me personally, when I'm working with my patients or someone calls me on the phone and they're starting to go to their process of going from crisis to thrive, I have to be really honest with you. I don't know if you get this, but those labels for me sometimes are like they're nails on the chalkboard, but they're also for many people glimmers of hope because then they have knowledge of what's going on. So it's like multiple feeling states can happen with words at once. So I just wanted to, I don't know if this relates to you or resonates or if you can even remotely like see where I'm going with this.
I absolutely can. I think awareness is key and it's vital. It was something I was not aware of most of the things that I was struggling from. And that took me a very, very long time and a very long journey to even start seeing some of the things I needed to improve. And as far as the labels go, you know, I have somewhat similar relationship with them as well. Cause I like the fact once I had an official label and we knew it was correct and everything fit, it was easier for me to understand. And it started to help maybe deliver me towards self-awareness. It did pigeonhole me a little bit in terms of what those labels come with. So a lot of them are daunting, to say the least. And so like with everything you just said, I absolutely feel the same way. For me, every time I hear the label, it's hard. What's interesting is I have over the past few years started to kind of see myself as not having those labels. They're still part of me, but I've risen above them, if that makes sense.
So that, can I just say something? Ding, 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 ding. Ultimate, ultimate, ultimate goal for all of us. When we integrate all the different dimensions of who we are and we reach our own unique optimal health and well-being. So Kirk's Kirk, you know, we're having these interviews, we're having these discussions, we're going to do this book, we're going to have events. But the bottom line is how do we reach our own level of self-love? And that's why, you know, as a doctor and MD, I want to elevate my level of expertise. I'm on the front lines every day where people pick up the phone and it's scary. It's scary to go get that help. But Kirk, so now when I'm interviewing you, can I start to just, I will put your bio always in, but when we do these like deep dive discussions, can I just say I've got Kirk back on the show and we can, so that, can we do that now? Do you think you and I are at that step or do you, this is my sacred ask. Maybe we decide moment to moment, which labels are important for that discussion that day, like a know your audience. What do you think of that?
I think that anyone who knows me should know me just as the person I am now. The labels are very vital for those that are trying to understand and find hope that you can overcome a mammoth task. And part of life and the journey we have is actually being able to, you know, continue on. And I think that it's never easy, but it's always worth it. So kind of just let your instincts guide you on this. And I know it will come out perfectly. So feel free to ask any question you want and we can get as deep as you'd like to as well.
Okay. Well, I want to just zoom into the present time. And in the last week, I just want to express gratitude because I now have a piece of your artwork in my home. And it's like for me, when I'm not only inspired by how amazing it looks, but it's a piece of your soul. It's the energy. It's the love. I love, even if when we eventually meet in person, even the way I positioned, it's almost like it was sacred, like I was supposed to be in the home, because I have a mirror that's shaped in a form of like sun that actually outspreads just like that. So even the way I angled, it's almost as if I knew this painting was coming. And so I just want to say, for me, when I look at the painting, not only do I enjoy it in the material sense of there's a painting that Kirk had and I'm so joyful, but it's because of your thrive and the essence of your creativity in reaching this exact moment in time. It's like a celebration of life for me too. So I just want to thank you for that.
Oh, it was my honor. And painting is something that I didn't actually even start until I was in my 20s. And honestly, a lot of the good in my life came from the struggles that I had. So some of my fearlessness came from technically what we would say in the Western world, in medical terms, mania. So my hypomania and mania would kind of push me into trying different things. And that's why I just sat down and my very first painting was not great, but I was in a flow. I just did a second one and I did a third one that day. And I remember the exact moment when all of a sudden I was like, oh, this is amazing. And it felt good. It wasn't that the painting itself was, but that feel. So all of a sudden that became something that was a passion of mine. And, you know, honestly, throughout most of my life, I did not have passions like most people say they do. So whether it was at every one of my moments throughout my life was always kind of struggling to breathe. So trying to catch my breath or catch up to where I was supposed to be. So if I was in school, it was a struggle. If it was social, I did really well socially because of being able to kind of pinpoint some of my fears. I utilized some paranoia to kind of figure out other people. So I did do decently socially. Not always consistently. And that was due to having, of course, downswings and upswings where I would scare people or on both ends of the spectrum. And I bring that up because as I went through each year, I kept wondering why everyone else had a favorite color. So I didn't have a favorite color. I didn't even have a favorite color until I became aware and I was kind of hitting past my crisis. So once I hit my stabilization, all of a sudden I liked bright green, like the color on a leaf or a really beautiful field. I love that color. That was the first time that I ever really saw something in a color and said, oh, I understand why people have a favorite color. So even from that standpoint, yes.
I'm like really moved in this moment right now because you being able to see color and the way you're describing this right now, I'm feeling like all the feelings of so many people that I've worked with, where they start to get to that point where there's some joy on earth. So my tears are not like tears of sadness. They're like real, genuine tears. They're like almost the miracle of that sensory awareness that there's more and that there's more to life and that no matter what you're going through, you can find your more colors. If we want to say, what are my colors on earth? What are my unique colors? So I just want to, like, I want to let you keep going, but I just want to, like, I'm an empath. So my neuro style, like the way I process my unique way that I process the world and the way, and we talk about the Fabulous Five. Kath was so brilliant to call them the Fabulous Five, like, you know, biological, psychological, social, cultural, and spiritual. And then the sixth I'm saying is a sixth sense of intuition. But part of my understanding of myself, I don't have, I haven't gone to see a psychiatrist to get diagnosed, but I am an adult and child integrative psychiatrist. And so I feel like we all have a style that we relate to the world. And so I would say my awareness is that I'm kind of like, I don't want to say subclinical because I don't want to feel like I'm diagnosing myself, but I can relate to that entrepreneur spirit or creative spirit of some ADHD. I can relate to hypomania. I can relate to perfectionism. I can relate to being an empath. Where in that moment where you were just, I was like, I can't even explain it because now I'm getting to know you and it's such an honor to know you. But this is the first time I heard you. I know you told me that you only saw black and white as a kid, and you sent me, by the way, it's so sacred, everyone, when we're working with each other and getting to know each other. It's so important, I believe, to be this reverent of like, oh my God, Kirk, when you were five, like you were just black and seeing things in black and white. Maybe you can share that. And now when I hear the first time you heard a color, I'm like touched because it's touching my soul. Like it's touching my soul for you, but it's touching my soul for everyone when they start to get kind of like come up for air and you feel like you can breathe again.
Exactly. Well, and I think one of the things that, you know, drove me to, you know, suicidal thoughts and things like that was I always felt like every day I woke up, there was panic in the morning from the generalized anxiety. And I didn't even know I was dealing with OCD because the other things kind of outweighed them. And looking back, there's a lot of things I haven't shared. Like when we drove on a highway, there were a couple things that I really have vivid memories of is every time I saw, you know, one of the little reflectors on the side of the road, I would grit my teeth and I would count. So I would count each one as it was coming by. And there were other things too, like hypersensitivity. So if I was sitting on the side where there was sun coming in and it would touch just the tip of my ear, it would just light on fire. And
oh my goodness.
It was really hard. So my parents would actually have to stop the car. And then my sister was always so gentle. I mean, she's part of the reason I'm still here. My family is really, they were vital to me actually surviving. But she would switch sides with me so I could sit on the side where the sun wasn't hitting. Because it didn't matter if you did air conditioning or not. It just, once it kind of lit up, it would hurt. And I couldn't get my mind off of it. So little things like that made me feel very alone. And I also felt like I kind of had to continue to copy other people or their path, because how am I supposed to fit in this world where I'm so different and I can't really do well in school, mostly because of, you know, causing some trouble. And I didn't always have...
No, you always behaved and you always sat still, Kirk Patrick Miller.
As you can imagine.
You never went through those wild phases that I read about in your book years ago.
Oh my goodness.
By the way, I love using humor too. It's part of like the excitement of life, because it's like, by the way, when you were just talking about that too, about sitting still and can I just talk about what you just shared about the pain that you felt? Can you can I just talk about that? Like the sensory awareness and what I see in my practice?
Absolutely.
And also as a mother. So my son, who I will let him tell his story later, he loves that I'm using the word neurostyle. So he's just, I'll say, qualitatively very active. And schools now, he, for the first time in his entire life, told me, "I like school, Mom." In fact, you're going to be getting a Thanksgiving card that says that. It's my own miracle, because his sensory and neuro style, I know you are your own unique, elevated, amazing soul, Kirk, but you and I've talked that there's some similarities with you and my son. He's his own person. But when he had to wear in kindergarten, when he was at this private school, they had like a dress up day. We had to wear this very rigid shirt and a sweater.
Ouch.
Kirk, the poor kid, he was crying to the point of needles going into his body. And he hit me and he said, I hate the head of the school that they don't understand that kids like me can't wear outfits like this. And they would not even, I'm telling you, Kirk, I got one of those sensory shirts to put underneath his outfit. But they, I'm not going to say the school because I'm not trying to like out anyone. I'm just talking about how much people still lack awareness that some people, when they wear certain clothing or they're in bright lights or they're eating certain foods, it doesn't even matter if there's a specific label yet or if there needs to be. But it's even having an awareness that we have different, we all process and perceive things in a unique way. That's why neurostyle is so multidimensional. So what you just said about that level of pain, as a mother, and I want to shout out to Jean. I'm sending you love. I know you send me nice messages. I mean, you just have done an amazing job. Jean's everyone's Kirk's mom, but just that primal level when you're a mother and you see your child suffering, like my son was in tears wearing that outfit. I felt guilty. I felt, and also when you would get haircuts, it would take an hour to the point where you thought you were actually slicing him open. I can tell you his path, but I just wanted to relate this to some of your sensory experiences.
Oh, I absolutely can relate. I absolutely love to dress up. I have two beautiful suits and they're the only two that I have. And I've worn them like twice. For me, even though I enjoy the idea of, you know, dressing up and doing that, it's painful. So even to this point to this day and age, I still struggle with that. And that's exacerbated by an autoimmune thing. So, you know, my skin's constantly on fire. So I'm always in pain, which honestly—
You're always in pain like right now?
Always. My skin's always on fire from the linear IgA. So it's something that I was always struggling with and didn't know. I was, I think, one of the first or second people diagnosed in Colorado. It was only discovered in 96. So it's still so rare. They just don't have research on it. I take a medication that keeps my skin from blistering, but it doesn't alleviate the pain. So if I go outside and if I get hit by sun, it feels like I'm getting stung by wasps. So if you add that on top of just even clothing, anything that moves my hair really hurts. So wow. There's things like that and sounds. So my sister would turn on the faucet and it would drive me insane because if she didn't lift it high enough, the pitch wasn't right. And so it would bother me. So it was all over. And if I'd walk outside, it was just suddenly cars, and lights and all of the stuff that we have. Our world has become more intense than it was when I was growing up. There's LED.
Can I do a strategic interrupt?
Absolutely.
So I like to always broaden this out. So your process and perceiving the world, I just want to give you an idea of something that's just happened in the last, you know, I'm on the front lines and, you know, I still, like you and I were like, let's just jump on this interview. And I have other things I want to talk with you about, but what you're just talking about, this sensory overload experience, I am finding that the kids and teens and adults in my practice that are re-entering the world post-COVID in different ways, hybrid routines, kids going to schools. I have people, Kirk, like, I know that they're not, I want to make sure you know that I'm still honoring the level of suffering that you have that's different, that everyone, I want everyone to know that your unique way of getting through each day on planet Earth is your own unique miracle. So I want to like broaden this out to the fact that I have people that it's just too much. They've been, you know, kind of enjoying, some people have really enjoyed the solitude of being in their home and having a smaller inner circle. And people are having troubles going to concerts. Like I have people that have, let's say, the diagnoses of generalized anxiety and maybe some ADHD and are high level empaths or some OCD, all different situations. I have someone with that's very successful, gifted artist with schizophrenia. And I've had to walk people through, we've had to come up with an awareness of their neurostyle on how to just get through a concert, how to go to a new event. Like, what do you have to do to take care of yourself with good nutrition, fitness, like maybe lessening your social activities before and after, so that you can actually show up to an event that might have a high level of noise, or you might be wearing an outfit that looks good but is not as comfortable. Yeah. So that mindful awareness of how do I just get through a moment on earth, no matter what, no matter if I have a diagnosis or not. And just to me, having a term, like I'm okay, people, even if you just say neurostyle once in your life, embrace your neurostyle. I don't need this to be like neurostyle. No, it's a gateway word and concept and discussion that allows us to be like, whoa, Kirk, seriously, I'm going to tell you this right now. As we're co-creating, you know, everything we're about to do, can I be like a better friend to you? Like, should I ask you, like, what's the best, like, this is how I would want people to be once we know each other's neurostyles. Like, was I too forward today just throwing you into this interview? Like, tell me what that was like when I'm like, let's just do it now. Like, cause I get so excited and maybe that's annoying. So do you see what I mean? Like, people don't even know how to talk like this.
I think part of embracing your own neurostyle is being able to embrace others. And one of the things that, for me, that of course I just have to understand with life is, although I like to have every single day mapped out to the second to fulfill my OCD, it's not a realistic.
Oh my goodness. What standpoint. Did I do to you today? What did I do? Oh my gosh. Like, so what were we like? So you were supposed to have something and you're like, oh my God, Denise just asked me to do this. So were you like on a scale of 0 to 10, 10 being like, this is annoying, 0, not at all. I mean, by the way, obviously we're going to finish the interview soon too, but I just want to like be real, because you could have just said no. I mean, but you and I were looking at our schedule and we were talking about things so much that I just said, let's just go for it. Cause sometimes I just view like life is the meditation. And we're trying to do this book or transmedia, but I felt like our conceptual discussions were so helpful. I thought, why not just get on an interview?
I think one of the most powerful tools that I have only recently discovered over this last year, actually even less than that, maybe even over the last 6 months or so, is the realization that everywhere I'm at, right at that moment is right. It's not a religious belief. It's not anything else.
Okay. Can I go do something right now? I'm going to do this. Ready? Strategic F-bomb alert. Strategic F-bomb alert. Strategic F-bomb alert. Okay. So what you just said, I like to say it's all divinely fucked up perfect. So that's like that acceptance and the awareness, because we were in flow. You and I were in creative discussion flow and we thought we could do a deeper dive. So before we finish up this interview, did you want to just give some insights? One of the reasons why we wanted to do this is you kicked off the season, but I want to just like, by the way, I am beyond appreciative of your mind, your mind. And I think I love my, I'm not on any psychiatric meds. My meds right now are swimming and serving others, eating healthy, being around good people, limiting, like I only drink alcohol when I go out, because I like know my genetics and I know my neurostyle. So maybe if I was choosing substances and I was being reckless, maybe I would be, you know, in a psychiatrist's office. I'm not against psychiatrists. I am a psychiatrist, but I like to look at my own family genetics and just be aware. So I just want to say that I love my hypomania that I have, because I know how to use the energy of it to be a creator. And so I feel like there's times you and I have, even from a distance, like that unseen energy, haven't there been times when I've called you at that exact moment because we were like tagging off some idea?
Oh, absolutely. And also times even when it wasn't, I was in maybe a gloomy spot or stuck. So I do feel like there's a lot in life that we can't explain, and that's not a bad thing. One of the things that I really love about what you just mentioned before about kind of balancing out and like, say you, if you want to go to a concert, kind of figuring out how to do that, we've
we've kind of gotten to a stalemate in a lot of things in when it comes to our mind. So we have people kind of, you're either an extrovert or an introvert. And technically, I'm an extrovert.
Or moment to moment, we're different, right?
Yes, some days, exactly. Some days. So my neurostyle is definitely more extrovert towards people. I love talking to them. Being near them is different. So I'm more of an introvert when it comes to being like right next to somebody. So being at a big party. Okay, wait,
ready? You would think by all my social media and everything and my happiness and the way I light up that I just completely thrive by being around people all the time. I don't. I selectively come out of my sacred space, my home, my living area to socialize and to help others in a service mode. Then I have to go back in and I have to retreat because I'm an empath and I love people like you mentioned, but I energetically get drained if I'm around too many people for too long. I need what I call pajama days, like right now I'm in my robe with my coffee going, yeah, I get to talk to Kirk. But like, had I had a full patient day all dressed up with my makeup looking beautiful and out of the home, because right now I'm doing telehealth. So this relates a lot of people, what you just said during the pandemic, their neurostyle, a lot of the entrepreneurs in my practice, I work with all ages, are loving working from home because they have more energy. Because they already were masters at their craft, but when they go out into the world, it sucks more energy to be actually in the physical presence. Now, this doesn't relate. Some people actually get more energy being around people, but people don't even know how to talk about this. So this dialogue and what you just said, you know, for us to even conceptualize ourselves that way is pretty amazing, right?
Well, and that's one of the reasons I really like the word neurostyle, because it helps everyone see things as a spectrum, because no matter where we are, whether someone, you know, and there's so many different things that we go through, and whether somebody's like hypersensitive, or OCD is a great example. Everybody thinks it's just about germs, it's about all these other different things, but everything, at least to me, and what I've discovered about myself is that I can't read a literature book and say every single thing points to me. No one can, because we're all different and we're all unique. So once we start understanding that we have our own style, right? So our neurostyle, it's empowering. It's freeing. It allows us to kind of go, you know what? It's also helped me understand a little bit more about some of the things I need to work on, like being able to say no to, you know, going out to a specific place a friend wants to meet me at. And I'm like, I just don't have the energy to do that. And it's helped me communicate. So a lot of times I won't use necessarily the word neurostyle if someone's not familiar right. with it. But I'll think about it and I'll go, this is where I'm at. So my particular style for where I'm at is I'm feeling overwhelmed on this and I'm feeling hopeful on this. I need to get to work on this. And then I can kind of build around that to help alleviate as much as I can the stress we deal with each day. And then also find the strengths that I have. So it's a way to empower ourselves. And
yes. So even if you for one time conceptualize the concept instead of the words neurotypical and neurodiverse, which I appreciate in the scientific community, how do we actually live in the real world, whether we have a diagnosis or not? So to me, I don't go around saying neurostyle all the time. This is more like my elevation as an MD who's been on the front lines with 40,000 hours of patient care, also an adoptive mother of a very charismatic son and also a mother to stepchildren that all had different neurostyles. Like, so I have that mother experience and the doctor experience. But it's not normal to always just go neurostyle. No, it's that idea of a word or a thought that whether it's the word neurostyle or when you say wellness versus illness, whether you say ADHD versus like like full of energy or like there's different and like words have power. And so for me, one of the biggest passions I have about going deeper on all the concepts I've been doing, you know, with my brand for the last 5 years is doing more like a deeper academic clinical geek, but I don't want to just do it alone. I want to like you, I just have to tell you, your mind, your ability to articulate your journey, you're such an inspiration. And I know sometimes, even though we get along great, like my neuro style, I want to just apologize. Like if I ever interrupt too much or cause I just get so excited. So I know we talked about embracing, but I think even like you and I talking like this, people maybe don't know how to do that. And I think that that's like kind of gets us closer to each other when we can do these deeper conversations.
Absolutely. And honestly, I want other people to understand what this word means and what it can do, because for both of my nieces, it's been tremendously helpful, because instead of waking up and, you know, being panicked, she kind of says, you know, no, right now, you know, I'm feeling like my neurostyles, I'm overwhelmed. And she'll choose a more positive word that's not necessarily as entrenched in a label or a negative connotation. So even once people start doing that and they choose the right word, like instead of hard, challenging, I use it with my students all of the time. I was like, you never want to say you can't do it or that it's hard, because we have our brain kind of locks into those words. They're like target words that people get hit with. And so the moment you change that from challenging, well, we love playing games, or if somebody likes playing, you know, video games, if it has the right amount of challenge, it's fun. If it's too hard, it's not. So once you even lock into the right word, like you said, the power of words, it helps people, you know, process and perceive their world in a more positive way. And so they can reframe.
Even the word shame. I think even when you hear the word shame, or you hear the word disorder, or you hear the word, it's hard to explain. And I'm not saying that we like, so if you want to look at the word shame more from a neutral standpoint, or even the strategic F-bomb, I did a show on that. In fact, I'll put a link into this since I did do the strategic F-bomb, that words, you know, it's the intention. So in us using the word shame or reducing stigma, we're not trying to land on stigma. We're not trying to land on shame. We're using it as a gateway discussion of elevation. And also no one, I would never expect any of us to perfectly always say the most elevated words. I mean, we are going to have days that we might be hard on ourselves, or our feeling state is full of shame or full of sadness. So I think the other thing to remember, and I always talk about this with my practice and also in my friendships and creating, is that everything's energy, and that our words, thoughts, and actions carry their own vibrational frequency. So when I have a day full of patient emergencies or lots of sufferings, I am in there like on the front lines diving in, and I have even a routine with a candle lit, a way to kind of start my appointment and end my appointment so that I don't take that energy into the next appointment. And then for my own self-care, my swimming, there's times when I'm swimming for 60 minutes, or sometimes I swim for 45, then just walk in the pool, because I'm energetically healing myself and my own material DNA, my own mitochondria. And I think that this kind of, we're living in a time where everyone's buzzwords, meditation, acceptance. And I think it's fantastic, because I call it the pulse of consciousness. We're all realizing that we are multisensory beings, but how to put it into practice requires a mindful awareness of our words, thoughts, and actions and our holistic health. And to me, you embody a journey, like you said, of so much crisis. And now I guess, where are you at with your own like self-love and acceptance at this point?
It's taken a long time and quite a few hiccups along the way. But I'm finally at the point where I would consider myself in the thrive. So I've gone through the crisis, which was.
Yay. Okay, go ahead. By the way, everyone, when I do this little, this is another way in my mind. Like, I'm not always hitting coffee cups all day long, but in my mind, when I'm listening to people and I just heard this aha celebration moment, if we as human beings celebrate the gratitude, celebrate the wins, celebrate the success, that becomes more of what's on the forefront of our mind. And that's the energy of inspiration that even if we're having a hopeless day or a tough day, we can draw upon that again.
Absolutely. And you know, what was interesting is that it took so long for me to get to a point where I was even, you know, stabilized. And then throughout that process, it was like learning myself all over again. And then finally, you know, I reach a point where the hard work starts paying off and the road starts sloping down. It gets easier because if we're consistently looking towards opportunity instead of a missed opportunity, you know, there's a lot of fear about missing out on things. Or,
FOMO.
Yes, exactly. So once we start seeing that, you know, this happened and this was really tough today. However, that made me more aware of this or that or my own personal need for this. It gives us information. So I like to think in objective data, and that helps my mind process the world because without me being able to look at everything that's going on, if I just take it in, it honestly is a wave of just, it's overwhelming. My mind is overcome. I tend to kind of shut down a little bit more. And so for me, one of the best ways for my neurostyle is to take everything that's happening and break it off into subjective and objective. And I go, oh, let's look at this objectively. The day's not over. The sun's going to come up tomorrow. Those kind of things. But it also gives me information. So if something bad, or not even necessarily bad, I don't even like that word. If something happens to me in that day and it throws me off, if I'm able to analyze it with reverence and appreciation, then all of a sudden I can take that and help guide my tomorrow. So that is one of the most powerful tools I've been able to grasp, which is honestly appreciating each moment. I have a long way to go to get there, but every time we can appreciate where we're at and the fact we are breathing, and that was excessively hard when I was in a suicidal state. And that's why what I did a long time ago is I started writing down when I had positive days. So I just have a journal of just positive things. And when a hard day just came crashing down, I would actually open up the positive one and just read it. So a lot of times it would just kind of just to help remind me of all of the good we have. I think that it's just human tendency to see one negative event as cataclysmic. It's going to be the end of us. And that is not we typically have more good days than bad. It's just that life kind of tends to remind us in a harsher way of some of the negative aspects. So being able to find my neurostyle, how I process information, how I perceive the world, how I perceive people and myself, that has continued to help enhance my ability to find positive moments, even in the depths of struggle. So,
is this an okay time to just, I want to honor the level of our conversation and why I'm happy to have you not only many different shows, but also the deep dive of your particular way, where we were in this meeting today with you, myself, and Kathleen O'Toole. And this is like a divine assignment. You could call it sacred. You could call it mission. You could call it vision. If you're out there in the audience, if you just believe that this is only one life and the word divine is not your word. See, that's the other thing too. Sometimes when I use the word sacred or divine, people like automatically go, oh no, it's all religion. But see, the word reverent carries a little bit more neutrality than the word divine. Because when you think divine, you think God, and you're like, oh no, are we about to be preached to? But I'm in the moment of right now in reverence with what we were sharing today. And can I give you, are you able, so I always like to ask people, are you okay with me giving you a compliment?
I don't take compliments well, but I'm absolutely.
Oh, well, that's, but see, even me asking you that, a lot of people don't even know. Like I do that when I'm helping people, because sometimes I'm so positive that it's like, oh my God, is this really a psychiatrist that smiles this much? Is this positive? So I'm even aware that my style, right? So I want to just say that right here, as we're wrapping up, that Kirk, Kathleen, and I are taking it very seriously because the world's in crisis. So Kirk's been kind enough to keep sharing his perspective, but the globe, it's reaching every socioeconomic class, every race, every gender, every possibility of spiritual awareness. And that's why this series, Embrace Your Neurostyle and Beyond, is near and dear to my heart. But what we're doing is we have an incubator team of myself, Kathleen, and Kirk. And we're meeting to try to elevate these discussions. So I just want to also just give you a gratitude compliment of all the work you've done, all the people you know, and getting to this point of thrive where we can go deeper in these conversations. And you love these concepts that I like, these universal concepts that I brought to India. I like to make really tough concepts simple, kind of like stop, drop, and roll. Or, you know, we're like, oh my God, I'm on fire. Like kids always remember that, right? Yes. And have you seen the movie Shrek?
Yes, I love the movie.
Yeah. So when we watch these movies like Shrek and we take our children or our nieces or nephews or grandchildren to these movies, they have the children's meaning and then they have the adult meaning. And I call this the Shrek factor, right?
Yeah.
So it's like when you're trying to do a project with someone that's an award-winning author, musician, poet, and thriving with his mental health and everything else I've already spoke. And then we're talking about Kathleen, who I've known since age 9, that's an Emmy award-winning news reporter, but also a mother of, you know, and really embraces this concept of talking about neurostyle. How do people get together with our backgrounds, but then actually with humility, talk about concepts of awareness, self-love and altruism, and crisis stabilization and thrive. So my compliment to you is you just shared how many hours, like your neurostyle with your OCD, like gone to town. I'm like, oh my God, he cares so much. And I'm like, well, why don't we just jump on another interview, right? And do I have your permission? You know what? I'm actually just going to give you a compliment without breaking it down. I just want to say thank you for your neurostyle. Like Kathleen's got her superpowers with taglines. I've got my creativity and my knowledge and wisdom, but your ability to go, Denise, from my perspective or my mom's perspective or someone, how are we going to talk about shame in an elevated way? So this series over time is really getting out of our own way in self-love. And I want to thank you for the way you're elevating the concepts of different ways we're going to integrate crisis, stabilization, and thrive with different feeling states. So I'm not going to go through those, but I just want to thank you because I know that this would mean something to a very young version of yourself or to a parent or to a teacher or to a therapist. And I just want to thank you for all the love you're putting into being here again today and everything you do when I'm in between the moments of talking with you.
Oh, it's an honor. And I truly believe that when I was blessed enough to, you know, reach where I'm at now, you pay it forward. So the right thing to do is to share the struggles and the successes so people understand that no matter what they're going through, the roughness, the tough times, you know, the financial strain, all of those things that we've all dealt with. Everyone deals with fear, anxiety, all the things that we've kind of mentioned about. But the longer we stay steady and face it head on, and we realize that the end goal is for us to be self-aware, self-actualized, and to be a loving human being that helps others on this planet, it's all worth it. The struggle is always worth it. And it doesn't matter what you're talking about, whether it's, you know, writing a symphony, and the end result is always worth the years of struggle somebody might go through, or whatever they're doing, whatever you're dealing with in life, just never give up and just find your neuro style and then embrace who you are. I love the fact that I'm a little neurotic and that I
love it too. And I'm sitting here in my pajamas and I've got a patient in 13 minutes and I know that we're going to end and it's going to be great, but I'm like, whoa, this was so cool. And then, how do I want to put this? I didn't know we were going to do this today. And I'm grateful that we just said, let's be in flow. And thank you for, maybe if you had something else planned at this time, I want to thank you. If I put a little ding in your neurotic day in a good way, I hope it's, we can use the energy to have the best day that you can have.
It always ends up being in the best way. And honestly, it's helped my anxiety to even look at life through that lens. So I have a long way to go to learn to go with the flow, but that's kind of one of my new goals. So, you know, I continually find where I am stopped and I make a new goal and I'll start attacking that. So this was actually a really good thing for me.
Okay. Can I just be silly? So everyone, just so you know how my mind is, I'm here listening to Kirk, but then it's almost like my mind has all these like cartoon bubbles coming out of it. And I'm picturing a cartoon where it's like, dun, 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 about to go on a call with Dr. Denise, dun, 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 full of energy, dun, dun, dun. She might interrupt you. Oh, she might even ask you to do a show. Oh my God. Like, and then you're like, and then you're like, okay, I can do this. So it's like, I also think it's funny. Like, it's like the joke of the universe. Like, I got matched up with the perfect son who I consider my teacher to help me grow. And then I feel like I got matched up to learn so much from you or Kathleen or like whoever comes into our life. Like, it's a gift. Like you said, embracing that moment and like almost like bracing yourself for the surprise. And it's exciting too. So I think that's the other joy of when you kind of get yourself. It's like a lot more fun.
Absolutely. And that's a perfect way to kind of, you know, circle back to the whole idea and concept behind NeuroStyle that you first introduced to me was to let me know that I was okay as I was. And I needed to figure out what my style was, how I was going to walk through this life. And the moment I started thinking from that perspective, everything got easier. So if you think of your life as being the kind of clothes you wear, how do you want to be seen in this world? It's a lot easier to figure out that's what I want to be seen as. That's how I want to look. That's how I want to feel. So let's make it happen. Just like if you're going to put on, okay, I'm going to wear this, these great boots and this, you know, pair of jeans, and that's how I want to look when I go out, you put them on. So it's a process. So that's what I love about the word NeuroStyle is it frees us up to look inwards and to decide how we want to live this life. What style do we want to bring to our daily life, our daily rituals, our mantras, who we want to become? So thank you for introducing that word to me. It's been a game changer for me, and I know it will be a game changer for everyone who starts looking inwards and realizing just how amazing they are.
Thank you, Kirk. And can everyone just hear where they can find more of you? Because you put so much love into your social media and your sites and your books and your memoirs. Can you let everyone know where they can find you?
I have a website, which is chaos, and then the number 2cured.com. And you can reach out to me there. And I use the same thing for Twitter, Clubhouse, Instagram, Facebook. So wherever you can type that in, Chaos to Cured, and always feel free to reach out. If somebody has any questions, I'm there to help. I can't offer any medical advice, but I can certainly be there to listen and, you know, tell people that their lives matter. And if they live it the right way, we can all reach it, thrive. And I think that should be a goal for all humanity, to be honest. So
well said. Thank you, Kirk. Thank you, everyone.